Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg. With me on the other line, as always, it's David Vermeil. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. Everything's going well for Heat Nation, and I'm looking forward to talking basketball with you.
Got some great mailbag questions. So now we're going to do, every Monday, we're going to do a Monday mailbag. That's going to be how basically we respond to the listeners with their questions that they send us via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or on Twitter at lockedonheat. And we got quite a few that rolled in this past week and this weekend, so we're just going to get right into it. So, but yeah. First of all, thanks everybody who sent us questions and comments and anything and left us reviews on iTunes and ratings, and we do appreciate the engagement a lot. It really helps us, and it really shows that we are not just talking to ourselves, that people are listening, so we love
that. Absolutely, yeah. Let me ask a question. Was the choice to do the mailbag on Monday simply for alliterative purposes, or was there just another logistical reason that I'm not privy to?
No, absolutely. I think just being a writer at heart, I think the Monday mailbag sounds way better than Wednesday mailbag.
You're right. It really rolls off the tongue.
Exactly. Monday mailbag rolls off the tongue. And it gives people, like, you know, a weekend to catch up on any podcasts that they may have missed and then ask us questions about maybe what we covered on the podcast or questions that we didn't even answer or address on the podcast. So I think it gives people enough time to catch up. And since we usually do our longer heat check on Fridays, gives them a chance to listen to that too. So
excellent. Yeah.
Basically it's a checks and balances for us and the listeners.
All right. Yeah. You justified it pretty well. Let's roll into it.
All right. So first question comes from Tayshawn Flats. So thanks, Mr. Tayshawn, for the first question that we got from the mailbag. He says, I'm very interested in this upcoming season for the Heat, but found it funny how we were able to trade for someone like Luke Babbitt. Babbitt the Rabbit. He says Babbitt the Rabbit.
He does. He's been listening. That's great, man. Way to go, Tayshawn.
Thanks, Tayshawn, for going with the nickname. Babbitt the Rabbit, but couldn't get McRoberts off our books yet. Why is that? And do you guys think he gets moved before the season starts? So it's an interesting question. I like that. It's a good comparison he makes, right? Because the Pelicans were probably trying to get rid of Mr. Rabbit for a little while. And trying to clear that cap or that roster spot, not really the cap space, because it's only about $1.2 million that he hits against the cap, but they wanted that roster spot. For the Heat, they've been trying to move McRoberts since maybe as soon as the last trade deadline, maybe even sooner than that.
I'd say probably from his first year here with the team.
Yeah, and they haven't been able to. So it's an interesting question. Do you have a guess? Do you have a gander?
Well, I mean, obviously no inside information, but I would say that a big part of it is, well, Babbitt's certainly cap-friendlier. I think, you know, it's interesting that you compare the two or that Tayshawn compared the two because I think there isn't necessarily a duplication of their skill sets, although Babbitt seems to be more of an active three-point shooter than McRoberts, and McRoberts is more of a playmaker type who just happens to also be, you know, tall and white, and he can shoot from outside, but he's more of the playmaker, finisher at the rim, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So I think the difficulty in moving a guy like McRoberts probably has more to do with his salary than anything else. I think we haven't seen a lot from him over the last 2 years, and his value was probably at an all-time high in 2014 when Miami signed him in the first place. So now that it's like you kind of drive the car off the lot and decreases in value as soon as you do so. That's kind of what happened with McRoberts. You know, from the second 2014 ended and he joined Miami, his value has been decreasing, and so. I just don't know that he's a coveted asset anymore, and you haven't seen enough of them over the last 2 years to justify that salary, even though it's still reasonably cap-friendly, especially with today's increased salary cap. So it's a curious thing. I don't know why somebody wouldn't be willing to take a flyer, maybe a team like Philadelphia or maybe even Portland, who already had him on the roster, another team that's willing to take a chance and a guy who can create a lot of offensive opportunities, can rebound, isn't a bad defender necessarily, if not a great one. He's not a rim protector, so that's a problem. But I think he has value in today's NBA, just, I guess, not at $5 million or almost $6 million per year.
I think, you know, first of all, you know, yes, they both have pretty good contracts based on both Babbitt and McRoberts have good contracts based on this current market.
Sure.
But Babbitt's is still literally less than the minimum contract, right?
So right.
That's while McRoberts might be an average to good value, Babbitt is below below literally what you could give a veteran, like below what you are allowed to sign a veteran to, you know? So that's an extremely good value if you see Babbitt as even the 13th or 14th guy on your roster. That's a great value. I think one of the reasons is that, you know, you look at where the Heat were after, not only after they did not get Durant, but after Wade left.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were trying to shop McRoberts more when they were trying to allegedly re-sign Dwayne Wade.
Sure.
And maybe trying to make that cap room for him. And now that Wade's gone, there might just not be enough of an incentive to trade McRoberts. I mean, what's really... With Chris Bosh's situation the way it is, maybe it's best to just keep Josh McRoberts. I mean, it's a guy who knows the roster, right? Knows
right.
that he's familiar with the locker room, the organization. With so much turnover, there's almost value into keeping McRoberts, even though he's not really been as much... He hasn't been a part of the team as probably the way they hoped as far as being on the court and contributing.
Sure.
But he's still a familiar face in that locker room, and that's got to hold some weight. And so you have that, and then I think if he actively wanted to shop him, if they were doing that at the beginning of the offseason, so many teams had so many open roster spots and wanted to see what the market was playing as before they went and traded it for a guy with an alleged below market value or even a good value contract. There were so many moving parts that just like trading for McRoberts was just so like not a factor for so many teams. They wanted to go sign guys like Evan Turner to $18 million a year. People wanted to hand out money to all these guys before they started trading and filling in holes. Maybe now, you know, where maybe teams are starting to fill in holes, maybe a team like the Brooklyn Nets just needs NBA players.
Right.
Maybe they trade for somebody like McRoberts. I don't know. But I think at first so many teams were trying to figure out the free market before they started going into, okay, who do we trade for that might be on a good value contract on another team that maybe is not being utilized the way that he could be. And I think you bring up an excellent point that McRoberts was most valuable when we signed him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's basically not lived up to those expectations since his last year in Charlotte. So I don't know. Do I think that they'll trade him before the season? I don't.
Right.
However, you know what? I'm going to take that back. However, if one of these summer league guys, if Magruder really impresses maybe in preseason or Roddy Magruder, the guard I'm talking about, or
right.
even a guy like O'Carroll White or I don't know.
Yankovic.
What?
Stankovic. Or Yankovic.
Yankovic. Stankovic. Jenks.
Jenks.
yeah, if Jankovic is a good one, right? Like, if he plays really well and they're like, okay, this guy can actually shoot the ball, maybe we can get a little bit more value. Maybe then they try to move McRoberts. And then if that's the case, they move him in order to keep one of these summer league guys on the roster. I still think that it's more likely than not that they keep McRoberts on the roster, given
sure.
that he's an able, savvy veteran that's been around the team for a while, and then try to move a guy like Jankovic and Magruder down to the D-League with the Sioux Falls Skyforce. Maybe that's more likely. But maybe before even the deadline, and they want to get some more value out of one of these guys, or they kind of smell another team poaching one of them. It's possible maybe they try to move McRoberts and then bring one of those guys up and give them a guaranteed roster spot.
Yeah, I don't think they'll move him before the season starts. I think
yeah.
his value, again, is probably best as a addition to the roster that you could potentially move fairly easily if somebody comes calling around the trade deadline looking to acquire somebody else who might be able to help out with offense or maybe want to include him as part of a bigger piece. I mean, let's say you need him, you know, just for shits and giggles. Let's say you actually need to include him in a potential trade with Oklahoma City for Russell Westbrook. I mean, that's probably the upper echelon or as far as potential moves that you could make. But you'd want a guy like, you know, McRoberts, again, who can be a potential nice addition to a team and is on a relatively decent contract. I mean, I think he adds value as a potential addition on a you know, trade option or something like that. So,
right, they're not going to trade him for just nothing, like the Pelicans traded Luke Babbitt for.
Right.
Okay.
Right. They're not looking to unload him necessarily, and I think that it's weird because part of me always thinks that Riley actually enjoys having McRoberts on the team, and that he still wants him and still has faith in him to manifest whatever he saw in him in 2014. It just hasn't worked out with injuries. But then I've also heard some talking about some resentment from the front office that for McRoberts, he's never quite fit in because he's not, you know, completely immersed in quote unquote Heat culture. He's not obsessed with basketball and he hasn't necessarily done enough to get himself back into playing shape. And he's fought through these injuries, but not nearly at a level that's something that the Heat and the you know, Riley in particular wants to see. So it's kind of difficult. I just don't know if he continues to have a future here in Miami one way or the other.
Yeah. One thing the Heat aren't going to do is just trade him. They're going to try to probably trade him. They're either going to need to trade him for a roster spot or they're going to try to get some sort of value out of him. I mean, the only times we've really seen the Heat just unload guys is when they're making room for other guys, right?
A bigger player, right.
Right. When it's like, yeah, the Shabazz Napier thing.
Sure.
You know, they got nothing back in return for a guy that was just, was a year removed from being picked in the first round. But they did that in order to facilitate other roster moves. So when those things happen, the net gain is usually larger enough. And that's going to be the type of situation where they're going to say, okay, now we'll unload McRoberts from basically nothing if the net gain at the end of this is something bigger. All right, I think we move on to the next question, which is from Mr. Tayshaun Flats again.
Yeah.
So, seeing as we have our 26, I'm going to shorten up this question. Seeing that we have our 27, the Heat have their 2017 draft pick, and with all the short-term picks or the short-term contracts that the Heat just signed, what's the better move? To tank now, or do you think that the Heat play out the season and then maybe when the deadline comes around, make a bigger swing for a star like Russell Westbrook or Rudy Gay, or even with those names already being on the market, does another name pop up closer to the deadline? I don't think that the Heat are going to tank. I think, from Pat Riley's press conference, which we're going to talk a little bit more about tomorrow, we're going to do the whole podcast on that tomorrow, but he did mention that this team is going to compete for the playoffs, and that's what the Heat do, right? Like, this team is not going to just flat out tank. Now, there might be a structural tanking in place, right? There might be some, like we saw right before 2010, where it's a bunch of short-term contracts, which is similar to what they're doing now.
Right.
But it's, I don't think they're going to be that bad, necessarily. I don't think they're going to be, like, top four or top five in the draft bad. I mean, especially if Chris Bosh comes back.
That's the thing.
Right.
Yeah, that's what really hangs over. And it's like so much of this offseason, so much of any move or any future that Miami has is weighed by, no pun intended, but weighed down by what happens with Chris Bosh. You know, it affects everything. It's like if you have him here, you probably don't have a legitimate title contender, but you certainly have a playoff contender. At least we've talked about that before. We think that the roster is still diverse enough. Whiteside is still strong enough. Goran Dragic is still capable. Chris Bosh at full strength is an all-star player. And we forget how effective he is because he hasn't been that way for much of the past two seasons. But he's still a guy who can space the floor, defend at a high level, you know, create his own shot opportunity. There's so much of what small ball does and that Chris Bosh can potentially thrive in and has thrived in over the course of his tenure with Miami that you forget how effective he would be in smaller lineups and everything else. And he could really change the face of the game. So, you know, obviously if he's at full strength, that's a completely different ballgame where you'd have to think that Miami's going to go ahead and compete for a playoff spot. Now, refresh my memory. Was the question whether they should or shouldn't or whether they will or won't?
Should they?
Then I think the answer is yes, they should.
You think they should?
I think they should. I think because of the short-term contracts, I think
well, what
because
do you mean by tank, though? Like actively lose games? Sabotage games?
Sabotage games? Look, there's going to be a nature of NBA players on short-term contracts to be inherently selfish because they're looking to put themselves out there to fluff up their statistical production to get as many gaudy numbers as possible in hopes of translating that into a long-term contract. Conversely, you also have younger players like Winslow and Richardson and Briante Weber that we'll talk about soon that are looking to build their games and do things that they've never done before. Maybe, you know, again, fluff up their production a little bit. So they're looking to expand a little bit. And then, you know, if Chris isn't playing, then absolutely. What are you playing for at this point? You know, we've already seen Whiteside put up really heady numbers without having a significant impact on games. So maybe he continues to play the same style that he did over the last two seasons, where he challenges for a triple-double every time, but it doesn't really it doesn't really affect a win or loss. You know what I'm saying?
I don't think they're going. I don't know what tanking looks like right now for the Heat. I don't think that they're actively going to go and hold Goran Dragic out for 2 weeks with a phantom hamstring injury. I don't think they're going to do something like that. You know, if Bosch can't go, certainly that's a form of tanking. It's not really self-imposed, but there is that. I mean, certainly the Heat could be extra cautious with Chris Bosch.
Sure.
You know, if we're going to go with almost the conspiracy theory here, that they could say, look, we don't want to play you because we're worried about your health, which could be true, but also what could be true is that, number one, without
they
Bosch, the team's a lot worse. And then they can plummet into the lottery for this upcoming draft. And the 2017 draft, we should note, is a very good draft from what everybody says. And I'm not a draft expert. From all the draft experts, they say it's a very good draft, better than this last one. And then, secondly, if Bosch can't play this whole season, there's an opportunity for him to come off the books from a salary cap perspective and assign somebody with that $20 or so million that would be vacated by his spot. But I think, given how the Heat are constructed now, where do they rank even in the Eastern Conference? We don't have to go with the whole NBA, but are they better than the 76ers and Nets? Yes, right?
With or without Bosch, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, either way, right? They're better than those guys. And then you have teams like the Knicks. We'll see how they come together. The Magic, they're kind of a weird show right now, but
absolutely.
I'm not sure how they're going to come together. But, you know, with or without Bosch, they're probably right around there. The Bucks, it'll be interesting to see if they make a leap.
Indiana,
Wizards,
Charlotte.
The Wizards got worse, right? Like, did they get better? No.
The Wizards?
Yeah, who did they do? What did they get?
They did make some additions. I can't recall exactly. I think most people tend to think they lost Nene Hilario, right? I think he's gone. And they still had... they re-signed Beal. They added Yamahimi.
Oh, I actually like that move, but center wasn't really. They had Yamahimi and Marcin Gortat still.
Right,
Morris will be there for a whole year. Maybe Oubre makes a leap in his second season. Overall, they didn't really make much of a change there. They got Scott Brooks, right?
Yes, he's going to be
that
there.
Makes them better or worse.
He's mostly at this point still. I considered a developmental coach, and I don't know that they have the kind of young players. I mean, is he going to help John Wall take it to another level? I mean, considering he played at such a high level last year, I don't know if there is another level.
Detroit, maybe like right there with Detroit if Chris Bosch is playing?
Yeah, Detroit. I mean, Stanley Johnson, is he going to go to another level this year? What other additions did they make?
You get another year of Reggie Jackson and Andre Drummond developing, right? They haven't reached their peak yet, but they're probably almost there.
Right.
I don't know. Then certainly you have teams like the Lakers, Phoenix that may or may not be good. You know, New Orleans, I'm not sure what kind of leap they can make with Anthony Davis and all the moves that they made.
Well, they traded the Babbitt, so clearly they're tanking.
That's true. That's a good point. Sacramento will be really, really bad.
I know you're looking forward to that.
Yep. So, I mean, there's a chance that the Heat could just be, like, the year after LeBron left, basically, that the Heat could be just bad. They don't have to tank, right? They might just be bad, especially if Chris Bosh can't play just like that year. They might just be bad. But I think when it comes down to it, like, the trade deadline, you and I have talked enough about Russell Westbrook, but maybe other names that pop up. You never can count Pat Riley out of making a trade. He's very opportunistic. If he sees a value somewhere, he might make a deal. And I don't know what pieces the Heat have in place. I don't think that he's trading Whiteside for anybody that isn't a top 10 player.
Right.
You know, I don't think he's jumping at the opportunity to include Justice Winslow into a trade, but if it's the right trade, I think he does it. but the Heat really don't have that many assets. They can't even trade their first round pick, you know? Right. Even going back to the Shaquille O'Neal trade, they added a few first round picks in there in addition to Caron Butler and Lamar Odom, you know? So it takes a lot of ammo to make a trade for a top 10 player, and I don't know that the Heat even have that. So I think that if I was going to guess, I think this is pretty much the team that they Heat ride out with. There's probably a couple changes near the bottom, but this is probably going to be something similar to what finishes the season. But
it seems likely.
All right, final question. From Lee Seaton. Thank you, Lee, for the email. His question is, given the extensive offseason discussion about the youth movement for the Heat and specific to last year's rookie class, what would you consider the appropriate and realistic level of growth for Justice Winslow, Josh Richardson, and Briante Weber as they enter their second year in the league?
How do you want to handle this one? One at a time?
Sure. Let's go one at a time. Justice Winslow.
What's his expected level of growth or projected level of growth for this second year?
Well, whatever we would consider as an appropriate... I think we answer this. What are our appropriate expectations of these guys in their second year?
Given Riley's comments from the press conference, you tend to think that Winslow is likely locked into the starting small forward position.
I think that's smart, right? He's going to struggle. But I think not... I think if Spoelstra and Riley are committed to giving him the starting three job, I think that's a lot. That's going to boost his confidence, and I think Winslow's a guy that's going to need confidence, especially with a jumper that's as inconsistent as his. The more confident he is, that if he doesn't want to be thinking out there, if he misses two or three shots in a row, he's going to get yanked, right? He needs to have, you know, carte blanche to go ahead and just shoot whatever shot he wants. And I think even Juwan Howard this summer has said, I'm comfortable with all of the shots Justice Winslow makes. So there's been a communication probably from top down that shoot whatever shot you want, Justice.
Right. And we saw that up close in Summer League, and I think that's a good point, because that brings me to my next step, I think, is that they also pointed to the fact, or at least Howard pointed to the fact, that he sees Justice taking on more of a playmaking role next season, that he has the athletic ability to do so, and it's certainly going to be something that's required of him given that Wade is gone. And I think you tend to forget, or a lot of people tend to forget, how much of a playmaker Wade was for the Heat. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as ball dominant as he was, he took the ball out of Dragic's hands often, and he created shot opportunities for himself and his teammates. And I think that's something that's going to be required of Winslow this time. So, I mean, I imagine that Dragic will be the focal point for the offense, but in a half-court set, you imagine that Winslow is going to have to do whatever he can to create shot opportunities for teammates.
Now that we're talking about it, I do think between Richardson and Winslow, I think Winslow's going to facilitate more offense.
Absolutely. Yeah, I just think that's also his strength. I think he can do it better than Richardson.
I think there's Richardson, a real opportunity there for almost, for a lack of a better comparison, but I think this is one that's familiar to a lot of people and could even excite Heat fans, is that Steph Curry, Draymond Green pick and roll.
Okay.
Where you can almost just hand the ball off to Green and then he can facilitate. I think Winslow has a lot of value as a screener / facilitator.
Yes.
With Goran Dragic specifically. And I think that's going to work out really well for the Heat, especially if they're going to move into a more small ball, pace-pushing type of offense, which we expect that they will. I think Winslow's going to have a lot of value there. And Winslow's a good facilitator. I mean, we saw it in Summer League where he can handle the ball, and he's got a good feel for the game.
He's fast as hell.
Yeah, great, quick first step. I mean, this guy, good decision-making. I like him in that role, and especially because when he has the ball and he's facilitating, he becomes less of a liability as far as a floor spacing.
You're right, except if he doesn't have the same kind of gravity that a guy like Draymond does. He's not going to draw a secondary defender on a screen and a roll. So, I mean,
if he's not like sitting in the corner waiting for a three-pointer, you know, people aren't going to help off of him. Somebody's got to cover the ball handler. So even if he's not drawing the second guy, he's drawing one guy. And as we saw so much in the playoffs, people just wouldn't defend him. He would have zero guys. So he's going from zero defender on him to one defender on him.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
But yeah, you're right. Like, he doesn't have that. He's not going to be LeBron or Draymond or anybody where they're getting, like, if he's gonna push the ball and try to slash to the rim, he's going to do so with one defender on him,
right,
which will be good for him, though. That'll be good for him.
You wonder what kind of lineups are going to be able to put together that are going to have like maximum perimeter shooting in combination with a guy like him. I mean, I think Richardson's going to be able to benefit a lot from that. And even Tyler Johnson, guys like that. I think, you know, they've shown that they can knock down open threes, and I think that's going to be more likely to happen with a guy like Winslow facilitating.
Chris Bosh, too, if he's playing.
Absolutely.
All right, Josh Richardson.
Yeah, I don't see him being the starter, although I think he's probably I can't remember now. We talked about it before, but do you see him being more effective as the starter or as the backup?
The starter, and I think he's going to start. I think the versatility he brings on defense, I think Tyler Johnson's certainly a hard-working enough player on defense, but he's not as big, not as lengthy.
Right.
I think that Richardson's versatility on defense as far as being able to guard twos and threes and ones, he can guard three positions where Tyler Johnson can realistically guard about one point guard, small point guards. And I think that's very valuable for a starting, for a player in a starting lineup. And I think that's what, I think he becomes a starter. And I think the way, and when we talked about it before last week, I can't remember what day, but you know, even though Tyler Johnson is getting paid more money, I think that the Heat are more committed to Josh Richardson's long-term development. As weird as that is to say, because Tyler Johnson's being paid more in the long term right now. But overall, I think that he's more entrenched as a starter and just looks and plays the part of a starter more. But Tyler Johnson is not going to be far behind. I mean, what's the difference between paying a starter and the sixth guy? You know, he's going to be the first guy. He's going to be probably one of the first guys off the bench, Tyler Johnson, and he's going to get 20 to 25 minutes a game.
So I think Richardson has a higher ceiling, and I think Miami recognizes that.
Yes, that's a good point. I think his offseason comments so far has been so much as trying to handle the ball and facilitate a little bit more.
Right.
He's been practicing that. We saw him running the point a little bit in Summer League.
Absolutely.
Even though it was mostly Briante Weber, who we'll talk about, but we did see Josh do it a little bit. And making sure that three ball doesn't go away. Basically making sure that last season's post-All-Star break streak wasn't a fluke, making sure that he can really be a knockdown three-point shooter. And it sounds like from his comments that the Heat are telling him, you need to be that knockdown three-point shooter for us, which also lends me to believe that he's going to be a starter because they need a knockdown three-point shooter in the starting lineup.
Yeah, I see him being able to connect on almost, I would say, high 30s. Given more opportunities, more shot attempts, I'd say he's probably going to be somewhere around a 39% three-point shooter.
Yeah, I think that's probably about accurate. What he shoot post All-Star break was above 50%, right? It was insane.
Yeah, that's.
And then that went down in the playoffs to something right about where what you're saying. I think he might have shot 36% in the playoffs.
Right.
But he was cold for a few games there, right? So, I think 38, 39 to 42% would be right where we should expect him.
He seems like a guy who depends on confidence a lot more, maybe because he is that kind of a shooter and he needs it. But I think, you know, there's so much he could do. And, you know, part of it is his slashing ability and his athleticism. I mean, he showed some explosiveness around the rim at times last year, but I think he's going to be more dependent on or more effective as a shooter now. But it seems to me like like we saw it up close in Summer League, right? Like when he missed a shot or he would finally hit one after a couple of misses, he would kind of just like knock his head kind of just to remind himself, yeah, this is how you do it. Like he beats himself up a lot. So you worry that he's going to, as a starter, whether or not that confidence is going to, or lack of confidence is going to eat at him. And you don't need him to do that. He needs to be able to take that next step now because he is part of Miami's future, for better or for worse.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a 3-and-D type guy who can slash when he has to. I think he's going to get along with Goran Dragic really well as a starter. I think there's going to be a good chemistry there.
Kicking out to open Richardson or trailing him?
Yeah. I think, and then plus Richardson, he's 6'6", right? He's long enough to go grab a rebound, too. And I think that's
absolutely
helpful to grab a rebound and then let him push the ball up the floor. I think you'll see a lot of almost replacing Luol Deng more so than maybe Justice Winslow does in that sense. I don't know.
Right, because Deng wasn't necessarily required to be the kind of playmaker that we're expecting Winslow to be.
Right. All right, Briante Weber. He tweeted out something earlier this weekend about, okay, now starts the goal of making the final roster.
Huh.
His contract, while he signed a 2-year deal, it's not guaranteed. He could not. He may not make the roster. That's a possibility. I think you and I both believe he will.
Absolutely.
Given how he kind of talked in Summer League, not that he was cocky, but that he almost like expected to be on the roster. I think. Am I wrong in that? or maybe not even expected, but he like that was he's
hard to say.
Maybe he was confident in himself enough to make the roster, I should say.
I'd say that he was grateful for the opportunity.
Yeah.
And given what the franchise has probably told him, it seems like he probably will have a spot, I think. But you know, a guy like that who's worked so hard to just to get to that point, I guess he's probably not going to rest on his laurels, and that's great. I think he's a guy who's going to continue to develop, and he's shown a lot of promise, particularly defensively. We saw it in Orlando. We saw it continue in Vegas. I mean, his hounding ability, you know, on the ball was incredible. Like, I don't know how many – I think he was averaging, like, close to 5 steals per game, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was like 4.2 or something, 4.6, something like that.
Yeah,
and,
something
and
ridiculous.
He's annoying on defense. I mean, he's so intense. I mean, he puts his shoulders in the guys. Like, he's got a huge amount of intensity, which I really like, which I can tell the Heat staff likes. Offensively, he's a little erratic.
I think,
especially from a facilitating standpoint. I don't know. He's not that great of a shooter. He's not a bad shooter. He's got like a nice little floater, which I like. But he's a little erratic. He tends to rush things a little bit more, maybe rush his decision-making a little bit too much. I think he's going to be one of those guys in small doses is going to be a lot of fun and is going to quickly turn into a Heat fan favorite, I think, if he comes into the game for like a minute or two, a half. I think that's with Tyler Johnson now re-signed, he's not going to be the primary backup point guard. I think he's going to be a guy that maybe plays 8 to 10 minutes a game.
You're talking about Briante?
Playing yeah, Briante, 8 to 10 minutes. Which would be maybe high, I think, at most.
Do you think Tyler's going to be the backup point guard?
I do. I think just because, well, either Tyler or Josh, you know, depending on what kind of lineups they make. Like if Tyler Johnson comes in, maybe Josh kind of slides from the 2 to the 1 or whatever. But I think that they have enough guys. I don't know how much Briante Weber's going to play, just because I think most of their guard rotation is going to be Goran Dragic, Tyler Johnson, Josh Richardson. I think Wayne Ellington's going to play because he's a veteran. I think you're going to see a lot more guys maybe get spots in that small forward, power forward area. Derek Williams, James Johnson, Luke Babbitt, all those guys. Just because I think Briante is so erratic, I'm not sure that the coaches are going to trust him. That's my expectation. And yeah. Because if you do play him for long periods of time, that's where he starts making mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I guess in my mind, I had kind of felt that he might be that likely choice as backup point guard, but there seems to be a glut of depth at every position, and he just might be, you know, not consistent enough to actually earn that kind of significant amount of playing time. And you know, there's still growth there, and there's an opportunity for him to continue to learn. And maybe that's part of the process then. If you're, you know, if Miami commits to a full-time, long-term development plan, maybe he gets more playing time. I could see him coming in on certain lineups where you might need a little bit more defense than what Tyler can provide, because of his overall length, you know, his size and his aggressiveness, which you pointed out before. So
I think he's like peaked in D League, right? Because he played well in the D League.
Sure.
He may have like, you know, topped out what he can do in the D League, and now he needs to be on the bottom of an NBA roster and give him some time to develop there. I think that's where he is, and I think that's what the Heat think, which is why I believe they signed him. Remember last year they signed him at the end of the year when they probably could have signed maybe another backup big, maybe a veteran big man,
right?
With the exception that they got. So I think by signing him, they definitely view him as somebody that needs a little bit more development in-house.
Are you surprised that they went with a guy like Weber or, you know, Magruder even, or over a guy maybe like Jarnell Stokes, that they didn't, you know, add him to the roster this year?
I'm mostly surprised that they went with those guys over Beno Udrih.
I think
if Wade resigned and they were trying to make another run at it, maybe that's when they signed Beno Udrih, because we even heard that after Wade left to Chicago, they stopped contacting Caron Butler and they ended up signing younger guys like Derek Williams and James Johnson. So
I hadn't heard that. That made sense.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. I can't remember who tweeted that, but this is one of the beat reporters, I believe. But if Wade resigns, I think Caron Butler's here, and I think Beno Udrih's here.
That's interesting. I mean, because you heard so much last year about Udrih working together with the team as far as his release and, you know, providing the kind of flexibility that they needed in order to add Joe Johnson, rather, sorry. But and you thought that something was in place. A lot of people thought there was collusion there. And I think Brian Windhorst in particular was a little miffed at the deal or the allegations behind that.
He wrote that deal. Some GMs were upset. Yeah.
Right. And now nothing panned out. And so
it
you wonder.
Strange, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, Riley is...
He might still sign with the Heat. I mean, preseason's coming up, and I think they have 17 players on the roster now. They can hold up to 20. They could still sign Bino and allow him to compete for roster spot, which I think wouldn't be a bad move, in particular if you're just trying to push Bronte Weber a little bit more, even maybe a guy like Rodney Magruder a little bit more. Signing Udry for a preseason deal, giving him a shot. He's been working out with the Heat.
Right.
From what we understand. So I think he's one of those guys on their short list that's like, okay, if Briante is not what we think he is and maybe we need another backup point guard, Udry might be on speed dial.
Okay.
And he might be one of those guys that ends up on this roster.
That makes sense. I mean, again, and, you know, given his journeyman status, the fact that he is an accomplished veteran and has been with so many different teams, he knows the drill. He knows how to go in there. Look, we didn't expect much of him last year. And then there were moments where, given his limited athleticism, he still thrived, you know, in certain lineups. And he played as well as you could expect for a guy his age and his limited athleticism. You know, he's a competent veteran. I think there's still a role for him to play in Miami.
All right. Well, I think those are all our mailbag questions. And thank you, Tayshaun. Thank you, Lee. Thank you to everybody that's emailed us over the last week or so. And keep emailing us for next Monday's Monday Mailbag. We're starting to take questions right now. So LockedOnHeat@gmail.com or on Twitter, LockedOnHeat on Twitter. Send us your questions, anything. They don't even have to be Heat related. They can be dating advice. We're here for you. Whatever you need.
Absolutely. I always give out dating advice.
Yeah, absolutely. Or nicknames. We're good at recommending nicknames.
That's your area of specialty.
Or...
you don't want us picking out child names for you.
There's going to be a boom. That rhyme, even if they make zero sense.
No, there's going to be like a boom of people named Udonis born in 2016 and 17.
I hope so. We need more Udonises in the world in general.
Yes, I agree.
All right. This has been Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Basketball Network, Locked On Podcast Network, sorry. You can find us on Audioboom. You can find us on iTunes. Rate us, review us, say nice things about us, send us those questions. Yep. And we'll talk to you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.